You unlock this door with the key of imagination. Beyond it is another dimension. A dimension of sound. A dimension of sight. A dimension of mind. You're moving into a land of both shadow and substance, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the Twilight Zone.
Welcome to the Film and Water Podcast, proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm your host, Rob Kelling, and joining us this week is my pal from the Thing Minute Podcast, I should say the now completed Thing Minute Podcast, Harper Harris. Hi, Harper.
Hey, Rob. How's it going, man?
It's great. I'm thrilled to have you here. As any of you who listen to the show know that I do one of the Movie Minutes shows, but I do Superman Movie Minute with my pal Chris Franklin. One of my favorites of the Movie Minute spinoff shows was Harper's Thing Minute. And I'm just saying that because I was on it. I love the thing, and I was so happy to be a part of it. I just think that Harper did one of the best of the Movie Minute shows out there. Like, it was just consistently entertaining, and it was kind of like the perfect combination of respectful to the movie, but also willing to kind of kid it at times. Like, it was, I just thought you did a great job, and so I am really thrilled to have you on my show as a way to say thank you for having me on your show.
Yeah, well, thanks for the kind words, man. It was awesome to have you on the show. That was definitely one of my favorite weeks of the podcast, and I'm excited to be on this show now.
Great, thank you. Now I do need to ask you, now that you're in retirement, because the Thing the Minute has completed. So how are you enjoying retirement? Are you reading a lot of books? Are you visiting the grandkids? Are you traveling? I mean, what's your retirement like?
it's been good. You know, it's funny every once in a while. I wake up in a cold sweat thinking I need to schedule somebody for this week or something.
Oh, I've been there.
it's been really cool. It was fun to wrap it up. You know, it was such a fun project to do, and it made me have such an appreciation for the movie. But at the same time, it was I was glad to wrap it up and kind of like put it to bed at least for a little while before I kind of decide what to do next. But still pretty deep in the Thing mythos. I actually just got the novelization last week, and I haven't started reading it yet, but I'm excited to do that. That was something I wanted to read before I did the podcast, but I had a hard time tracking one down for a reasonable price. So I was glad to finally get it.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I'd like to read that too. That would be fun, just to sort of read the alternate Earth version of the story that you know
right.
So well. Well, Harper is here to talk about not a movie, but a TV show, an episode of the TV show, which is an episode from The Twilight Zone titled "Will the Real Martian Please Stand Up?" And many of you are probably thinking, well, wait a minute, you talk about movies on this show. Why are you talking about a TV show? Well, I really wanted to have Harper on, and I wanted to have Harper on to talk about something Thing-related, but I have no idea what Harper's future plans are, and I thought, well, maybe he might do Thing Minute for the 1953 version, of course, the one by Howard Hawks / Christian Nyby, or the Thing Minute of the prequel, although you kind of pretty much said you weren't going to do that, but I didn't know, and I didn't want to like do the whole movie when you might do a Thing Minute version of that. So I thought, let's talk about this episode, which has got so many thematic ties to the Thing movie in terms of its setting, its messaging, all this kind of stuff. I thought it would be so fascinating to talk about. Plus, it is my single favorite episode of The Twilight Zone. So I figured it's worth it to talk, you know, to bust out the format for a little. So we'll just do a TV show, a TV episode for this time. So this episode aired on May 26, 1961. It was directed by Montgomery Pittman, who also did a couple other Twilight Zones. He did two with Elizabeth Montgomery and Charles Bronson. That's kind of a famous one. The Grave, Dead Man's Shoes, and The Last Rites of Jeff Myrtlebank. It was written by Rod Serling, who, of course, wrote many of the great episodes of The Twilight Zone. And Harper, you had not seen this episode when I suggested it. So I'm kind of finding out in the air, like, what you watched it for the first time. What was your thought? Why did you like it?
Sure. Twilight Zone's been one of those things that's always been kind of on the periphery for me, I guess. Like, I've seen a couple of episodes, and every time I watch it, I really enjoy it. I saw the movie when I was a kid, and it scared the hell out of me.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've always been kind of interested in it, but I've never, like, you know, dove head on into it or anything like that. So, and this episode was a fantastic place to start. It really makes me want to dig into the whole series now. It was just super fun. And, you know, the other thing I can't not mention is that I was so impressed with the quality of the restoration, too, is something, you know, aside from how, you know, fun the episode itself is, that I was so impressed with how well it's been restored. It sounds fantastic. It looks great. You know, I would, aside from, you know, some telltale, you know, little 60s bits, it, you know, this could have been filmed, you know, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, these Twilight Zones look really crisp. They really do.
Yeah, it looks and sounds fantastic. So, I was really pleased with that. But, yeah, as far as the episode goes, I really enjoyed it. You know, one of the things I always kind of expect going into a Twilight Zone episode is kind of that, you know, kind of a cliche thing is like you can kind of see the twist a mile away in most of them. And, you know, that's kind of the fun of it is, you know, there's this it's got such a, you know, a lot of like recurring themes and stuff that you see, you know, the whole like who's the real monster thing.
Right.
But, you know, this was an episode where I didn't really know exactly where it was going to end up. And that was really exciting and fun to kind of dig into. And it was cool to see this, just kind of this idea put into such a short format too, because, you know, having gone through the thing, which was, so many minutes long, it was, it takes a long time to kind of explain that. And I was really impressed with how quickly and efficiently the kind of idea and the concept was sold, in the episode. So I thought that was really, really cool too.
Yeah, I mean, this show is only, of course, 25 minutes long, and it's essentially a bottle episode, and that it all takes place in a diner. For anyone who hasn't seen it yet, by the way, we're gonna spoil the ending. In case you might want to go. It's on Hulu. All the Twilight Zones are on Hulu, so I would
Netflix
suggest
too.
Oh, they're on Netflix. Awesome. Yeah. So if you haven't seen this episode, I would pause this here, go watch it, and then come back because we are going to spoil the ending. But the plot of it is basically following a frantic phone call about a crashed spaceship, two policemen try and determine who among the passengers of a bus at a snowed-in roadside diner is from another world. And so it is literally a bunch of people trapped in this little diner, in this snowbound diner, and one of them is an alien. And in fact, later on in the episode, one of the characters refers to the alien as the Thing. They literally referred to it as the Thing. When I was rewatching this episode, that line like jumped out of me. I was like, oh my God, this is – I mean, I have no idea whether Rod Serling read the original novella by who's his name? Who goes there? I'm blanking on his name.
Oh wow, I am too. This tells you how long my retirement's been.
Anyway, they got the original novel. Who Goes There? Now was published in the '50s. Now I have no idea whether Rod Serling happened to read that and maybe got some inspiration. But the whole idea is, you know, this bus has arrived, and there were the bus driver swears there were only six passengers. He knows that for a fact, but he doesn't remember which of the six were there, and now there is mysteriously seven people in the diner, not counting the counter manager played by Barney Phillips, the actor Barney Phillips. And the reason I'm mentioning Barney Phillips is because, random factoid, he did a voice on an episode of the all-new Super Friends Hour, which was an episode that my partner Shag and I covered on the Fire and Water podcast a couple of weeks ago. Totally random. He's a voice
on there.
That's
funny.
So aside from the cops and the counter manager, there are seven passengers, and yet the bus driver swears there were only six. So somebody got into the group, you know, kind of on the down low, and is secretly the alien. And of course, it doesn't take long for all of the people on the bus to start looking suspiciously at one another. There's an older couple, there's a younger couple, and the young girl is like, did you always have that mole on your chin? And he's like, what are you talking about? I've always had it. So they immediately start suspecting one another upon news that there's an alien. And I don't know about you, Harper, but I thought it was charming that, like, I guess in part of it is that when you only have 25 minutes, they believe the alien thing really quickly.
Yes.
Everybody buys into, I guess there's an alien here.
Totally. That was one of my first notes I had. It was just like, yeah, exactly, because it's such a short format, I guess. But it's funny that, yeah, within, you know, 5 minutes of these officers showing up, they're all like, oh, well, yeah, of course. Like, you know, it's not a leap to believe that there's life on another planet that has crashed into the trees half a mile from here, and that one of the people in this diner is an alien creature. they're all that's not a concern. Like, they move past that like extremely quickly, which is kind of nice, actually. You know, it's one of those things where, like, every time I see a new horror movie, it's like, I kind of wish we could skip the part where nobody believes the protagonist about what's happening, because, like, we've all seen that cliche a million times. Like, we get it. But so it was nice to see this where they do totally kind of gloss over that and move on to the more meaty part of the story.
Yeah, I mean, there's even another line that reminds me of the thing where the cops are investigating they see that there's been a crash in a lake, and he says, whatever crash is going to be under the ice until next spring. Like, well, there you go. You know, I'm expecting they're talking about the backscatter. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like, I mean, it's amazing how many things were in this episode that remind me of the thing. So the two main, I would say the two main suspects in this episode are, we have this guy named Ross, who's this sort of really officious businessman who doesn't have time for any of this nonsense. He's played by John Hoyt, the legendary character actor John Hoyt. Most of you that are listening to this, if you're familiar with him, probably remember him as Dr. Boyce on Star Trek The Cage. He was the original doctor before they changed the, you know, of course, that show went through its all permutations, but he was the original doctor. And then the other, the real red herring is this really weird guy played by Jack Elam, the great character actor Jack Elam, who, of course, the director and the writer used Jack Elam's inherent weirdness to its maximum effect. First of all, his one wall eye that he always had. But do you notice they paint him in like really heavy dark makeup? Like, he's not normally that dark skinned. And it makes me wonder, did they do that to like slightly suggest that he's a Martian? Like, he's got kind of a reddish skin, because that actor is not normally that dark complected.
Oh, that's so weird. No, I didn't notice that. I guess I don't know that I've seen him in other stuff, although he looks familiar as one of those kind of classic character actors.
He's in a million westerns.
Yeah. I didn't notice that. That's funny. Okay, but yeah. I absolutely loved his character. he has so many awesome lines in this episode where he's kind of like, he's very much like, he's the counterpoint to the businessman guy who's very serious and is like, you know, this is ridiculous. Let's get over, you know, let's get this over with. And he's like very much willing to play along and joking about the whole thing. And is, you know, I like, he says like, when the woman says she was a professional dancer, he's like, well, how many legs you got?
He does not, like, to use modern parlance, he does not give a fuck. You know, like,
no.
he is just totally, and he even mentions at one point, he's like, this is like a regular Ray Bradbury, which is a great little meta joke, because Ray Bradbury wrote episodes of The Twilight Zone. And it's one of the few times, I'd say, The Twilight Zone made, like, a contemporary reference, you know, to something that was going on in the culture at the time. But he is not taking any of this seriously. And of course, that leads you to think, well, he must be the Martian, because he's talking about how many eyes people, he's like, different eye in the back of your head. And he's like this crazy prospector type guy. And you always think, well, he must be it. And instead, the suspicion moves around from person to person. There's a single woman who doesn't have any ID, because she talks about that she moved all, she sent her bags on ahead, which is, it's kind of a funny thing when you think about, like, nowadays, nobody travels anywhere without ID.
Yeah.
You know, but back then, you could just do that. You're like, oh, I sent my wallet ahead. Why would you? What? Like, who does that?
Yeah, what a weird thing to do, yeah. Like,
you know, there's no way I'm ever going to need any money, so I'll just send my wallet ahead with me. So he said you have the older couple and then the younger couple, and they all just start suspecting one another. And then crazy shit starts to happen, like the lights start blinking on and off, the jukebox turns on and off, the phone rings. For no reason. And so the whole paranoia really starts ramping up, as clearly something is wrong. Something is not right. And the cops are like, nobody move. Everybody just stay here until we can figure this thing out. And that is sort of the general tension of the show. And it's, I love how, I mean, Montgomery Pittman, he directed, again, I talked about, he mentioned some other episodes. Like, visually, I don't think this has a whole lot of style, but they get a lot of mileage out of just this tiny setting. And,
oh, sure.
You know, and I never thought, I mean, I've seen some Twilight Zones that, to me, kind of wear out their welcome a little bit, even at a half hour. But this one, I'm just, like, I love the interaction of them back and forth, because all the characters are sort of very different from one another, and you could see how quickly this degenerates, much like The Thing, how quickly trust degenerates.
Yeah, totally. And it's, you know, it's a big part of it, too. I think it's just that there's such a, it's a wealth of interesting characters involved, too. It's not all just kind of, you know, very samey people that are all sitting in this place, too. Like, and like you said, they do a good job of making each one kind of suspicious at different points in the episode. And, you know, like I said, one of the things with Twilight Zone, in some cases, you can kind of see where it's going a mile away. And sometimes, and you can also kind of see where, like, the fake out solution is. like you know, at the beginning, obviously the businessman who's got kind of like almost an accent too, like that's supposed to make you suspicious of him, maybe, I'm not sure. You know, he seems obvious at first, like, oh, well, clearly he's the one who's like, he's, you know, trying to divert the cops. And then there's the crazy eyed guy at the bar, like, oh, well, this guy's obviously an alien, he's nuts. you know, and then the ID with the, you know, everybody kind of gets their own little moment in the spotlight where they're kind of the suspicious one. So it's always moving forward in that way too. So yeah, it definitely never gets boring. I wanted to mention too, that we didn't really talk about the very opening of the episode before they even get into the diner, that I just thought it was really cool. First of all, that they basically, the UFO crash is portrayed completely with sound. Mm-hmm. Like, They show these snowy trees out in the wilderness, but you hear the crash, which I thought was really cool. One of the things I love about kind of classic sci-fi is when they're able to do a lot story-wise and build like a huge world with doing almost nothing visually, nothing like, you know, like stuff that doesn't require like a huge special effect or anything like that. I think I'm a big Doctor Who fan, and my favorite episodes are the ones where the concepts are huge, but there are like no visual effects whatsoever. Like, you know, they take place in a locked room kind of thing. Mm. And this episode is a perfect example of that, where there's hardly anything up until the very end that, you know, required any kind of visual effects or special effects at all. But it's such a great concept and such a cool idea, and it really opens your imagination because that stuff isn't just shown right in front of you. And plus, you know, it's a way to make that stuff a little bit more believable. You know, if they had maybe animated or you know, done a miniature UFO, you know, that might seem a little silly or might look a little out of place. But to do it just with sound like that, I thought was a really smart, clever way to pull that across.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because that is one of the things that I think, you know, like, I wonder, like, why is this my favorite? And there is something to me inherently terrifying about some sort of evil festering, like, in a quiet little town. I've always mm-hmm. been scared of, like, the whole concept of the nightmare town, which has been in books and in movies. I mean, where you would talk about, like, even, like, Hot Fuzz is, like, kind of like which is a parody, of course, of The Wicker Man. But that idea that, like, there's a whole town in on some evil conspiracy, that is terrifying to me. And so, I mean, you know, yeah, it's scary if you see monsters ripping up New York City or whatever, but there's something to me way creepier about, and you mentioned that great sound, that classic sci-fi UFO sound, mm-hmm. and you hear it land, and it's like, there's something just to me so creepy about everything being quiet and sort of peaceful looking, because it looks like a Christmas card. It looks like a Currier yeah. and Ives Christmas card, but yet there's some horrible thing that's happened just off camera, and that to me, I'm glad you said that, because it really sets the show off on the right foot. Like, you're immediately like, something ain't right. This is weird.
Yeah, the opening is so cool. I loved that part with the sound. And then I did have to note that I thought it was funny that, you know, a UFO crashes and has been sighted, and they send two police officers to check it out. Like, we don't get that anymore in movies. we get the they send the Avengers in instead. But I thought that was kind of funny. But, you know, that's a classic sci-fi little thing. But and then, of course, you know, since I haven't seen that many Twilight Zone episodes, I have to ask, does Rod Serling show up in every single one?
Yes, he does.
Because that is so awesome. Yeah. I loved that part so much, where, you know, basically in this episode, the officers are kind of going down the hill and approaching the diner where they see the tracks leading from the crash are going. And the camera's kind of panning with them. And then suddenly you see Rod Serling standing behind like a – I can't remember if it's like a rock or a tree.
He's in front of a tree, yeah. And he's got his cigarette, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, they can't see him, but, you know, he's, you know, he kind of starts to narrate the story a little bit in person, which is so, so cool. I mean, that's such a cool stylist thing that I just, you know, that's one of the things I love about the Twilight Zone, is that whole kind of the narration and the, you know, the setup is always just such a fun, I don't know, it's just so different. You don't see that kind of thing at all anymore, and I love that.
Yeah, it's fun to see the guy, like, actually on the set of the action that's going to happen. Just as a side note, I did a binge watch of the entire series a couple of years ago, because I was like, all right, I've seen a bunch of it, seen maybe most of them, but I haven't seen all, so I'm just going to rewatch the whole series from beginning to end. And there's a season one episode where the story incorporates Rod Serling's as the narrator, that's awesome, into the story. It made my head explode. I was like, wait, that's not supposed to happen. He's not part of the story, but yet there you go. And I think they were like, let's not do that again. Like, they did it one time. They're like, all right, he's just going to be off to the side. But yeah, I mean, it's really got this great intro of just like, okay, something's amiss, something's wrong. And it's funny, because the cops take it seriously, but yet they're, as you said, they only send two cops. So, I mean, they're not taking it that seriously. And they're almost looking at it like, maybe there's not an alien, but there's just something, somebody's suspicious and we got to take them in. And back then, you could kind of do that. You could just take people in for looking shifty, you know, they could just kind of do that. And like,
well, I guess they did crash some kind of air or spacecraft too. So
that is true.
That's a pretty good reason for suspicion, I guess.
Yeah, and part of the reason that this episode stuck with me so much, and I can't separate the context from it, is the first time I ever saw it was in 1989, and this was the night before the last night before I was going to go off to art school. And so I never went to like camp as a kid. I didn't really do any of that kind of stuff. So I had like literally never lived outside my parents' home for the first 18 years of my life, other than like a sleepover here and there. But yeah. I couldn't sleep that night because I was so excited and sort of terrified about what was my life going to be like in 24 hours. And I had a TV and I watched The Twilight Zone just happened to be on. And I put this episode – I didn't know what this episode was. So I was like, let me just watch it. And it scared the living hell out of me. It just – and the Twilight Zone, it doesn't – to me, it's not that scary anymore because it's just – it's so old hat. And you can appreciate it on a certain level, but it's not terrifying. But I remember being so unnerved by this, and I'm sure that had to do with the fact that I was just on edge about what my life was going to be like very soon. And I will never be able to separate – those two things. And so every time I watch this one, I go right back to that sort of creepy feeling of like, oh my God, what's going on? So anyway, as the episode progresses, there's a running thing about the cops are talking about that the bridge might be out. The bridge is out because the snow is falling. But then they get a call saying, oh no, the bridge has been repaired. The sort of surveyors have taken a look at it. It can survive the bus and the cop car going over it. So everybody's great. So they decide, okay, we're going to pile back in the bus and head out. And there's a great line too, where they all settle up with the counter manager. And at one point, the guy says to one of the customers, "You had 14 cups of coffee." I was
like, totally.
14 yeah, cups of coffee.
It was funny. I didn't when I me and my wife were watching it, and I didn't catch that. And she goes, "14 cups of coffee."
Oh my God! Somebody be a little jittery, I would think.
I guess they've been up all night, but geez, yeah.
Yeah. Woo. Okay. So, and I also love the old timey prices. Like the one guy's like, "You got a bowl of chili? That's 15 cents." I'm like, oh God, yeah, 15 cents. Yeah. So anyway, they all pile into the bus, and the cops get in their cop car, and they take off. And that's the last we see of them until we go back to the diner, and we see Ross, played by John Hoyt, walk up to the diner, and he's all by himself, and he sits down and he orders a cup of coffee. And he mentions the fact that the bridge, in fact, was not safe, and it was in fact weak. And the bus crashed through the broken bridge, as did the cop car, and everyone fell into the river, and everyone is now dead. And the counter manager is like, Haley, the bartender, is like, "Well, how did you survive?" He's like, "Well, I managed to." And he goes, "Wait a minute. How did you make it out of the river? Your clothes aren't even wet." And that's when Ross answers, "Wet? What is wet?" And right, okay, now we know. All right, what's going to happen? And Ross reveals himself that he is, in fact, a Martian. And that is revealed when he smokes his cigarette and a third hand pops out from beneath his coat to light the cigarette with some great music. I love that weird, like, little theremin song theme. And he talks about that he's a Martian and he is here to begin a colonization of Earth. And that is the beginning of it. They're going to do it in this nice, small little town. They figure that's a great place to start the colonization. And that's how this is all going to get started. And then we get the double whammy where the bartender reveals that, well, we knew about you Martians coming for a long time. You see, I'm from Venus. We knew about you guys for a long time. And we've already, your friends aren't coming. It's us Venusians that are going to be colonizing. And he's like, and if you don't understand, maybe you'll see it a different way. And he removes his little beanie cap that diner cooks wear. And we see he has a third eye. And so we find out that Earth is, in fact, going to be colonized, not by Martians, but by Venusians. And that's the end of the episode. And basically the moral of this episode is monsters really are out to kill us. That's the moral of this episode.
Also, don't ever go over a bridge in the winter.
Yeah, don't go no matter what.
Because apparently that has nothing to do with either of the two interplanetary invaders, but just that the bridge was just, badly engineered.
Yeah, it would just use it as a sucker punch for these guys. And so that I have to admit, like, when I first saw this, I did not see that coming. I just did not see the double. I mean, I knew that one of them was going to be the alien, but the fact that they did the double reveal, I just, and it ends with just that shot of the two of them at the diner, and we pan up and we hear the Rod Serling narration and the music, and that's it. And it's just, it's such like a, again, pardon my language, such a, like a mindfuck of an episode.
Yeah.
That you're like, oh no, we are really all doomed. That's this episode.
Yeah, it is cool because, it goes from, you know, the initial kind of concept is all about that paranoia and trying to figure out who's who kind of thing, very much like The Thing. But yeah, then in the end, it's almost like the twist is that, no, that's not really the problem. The problem is that, you know, we've already been invaded and there are two, you know, it's almost, it's weird. It's like there's two warring alien races like attempting to take us over. And it's the reveal of the third arm is so amazing. It's so like subtle and careful and like, You almost might miss it for a second when it first happens. Like,
it looks
it's
so
just,
natural, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. They, you know, whoever, you know, I'm sure back then they probably did not credit the third arm man, you know, whatever position that was on set. But, yeah, they do, those two guys with the three arms do a fantastic job of making it feel very natural. Like, you know, it doesn't seem out of place at all. It doesn't, you know, he's not like, you know, grasping for the matches on the table or anything like that. Mm-hmm. It looks very natural. So it's very unnerving when you finally, when you notice it. And I love the whole, the wet thing is such a, it's kind of a funny reveal too, a little bit, because, you know, this guy has impersonated a person pretty damn well. You know, he's been interrogated by the cops and these other people that were on the bus and all that. And he had never had any problems with any of the words they said, but wet is the word that he's not familiar with.
Yeah, that was so weird. Like, how does he go through life not knowing what the word wet means? You know, like,
yeah.
How does that not tripped him up before?
Yeah, I wasn't expecting a language kind of reveal. I was, you know, Inglourious Basterds kind of thing, I guess.
Oh, right,
I was expecting more of like, I'm not wet because, you know, I was the one who pushed the bus over the edge or something, you know. So that was kind of an interesting little trick too. But yeah, the double twist in this one is pretty intense. And I love the diner clerk is such a great character too, that he's, you know, he's the one person you can't suspect. Him and
right,
the bus
right.
driver and the cops, I guess, are the only people that you maybe can't suspect. And so, of course, it's a major surprise when, you know, he takes his hat off and he's got the third eye too, which is very cool. Not quite as cool of an effect as the three arms,
no.
but still works pretty well. I like that in the 60s, all aliens, every other planet, they're just people with one extra of something that we have.
Right, yeah.
One extra appendage or eye or mouth or something.
The limitations of a TV budget, you know. I mean, you don't – the Barney Phillips is never given in any of the – in the whole episode, like, any memorable line. So he doesn't stick out. And you're like, well,
right.
He's already running the diner. He can't be the alien. You're right. You totally gloss over him. And so when it gets revealed, it's just fantastic. And I love the fact that when Ross, you know, finds out that it's, oh, the bartender is a Venusian or however you say it, he doesn't even seem all that shocked. Which makes me think that these other planets have been warring with each other for a long time. Like he's disappointed, but he's not like, you're from another planet too. Like he just seems kind of like, oh yeah, oh shit, you know. Like he's like, oh well, there goes our plan.
I guess it's like, you know, he's trying to buy a house on Earth and finds out that, you know, somebody else has gotten to it before him, basically.
Yeah.
But yeah, what are the chances they both show up in this little town? Like, of, you know, there must be some really you know, premium real interstellar real estate in this like Minnesota town or whatever.
Yes, so yeah, I think it's Vermont. I think they say it's Vermont.
Oh, it's Vermont. Yeah, okay,
Vermont,
yeah,
I think so. Have you ever seen the Monsters Are Due on Maple Street? That classic Twilight Zone.
No, I hear about that one all the time, but
yeah,
I don't think I have actually seen
one
it.
One of the more famous ones, and it's this episode is basically the flip version of that, because that episode is all about how, yes, there really are monsters that are coming to kill us, but the way they're going to do it is by pitting us against each other. And so that's the real foe, is turning against your neighbor. And here, nobody in the diner really ever it never goes further than them just suspecting one another. It doesn't turn into violence. It doesn't turn into, like, in Maple Street, there's actually rioting and murder and stuff like that. This, everybody's just kind of giving each other a side eye, but there's no real, it doesn't advance past that. This is kind of the opposite take of that. It's like, no. This one, there really is an external threat ready to kill you. And this episode, I'm happy to learn that this has resonated with other people. I did some research for this, and Todd Vanderwerf on the AV Club, when he did a whole review of Twilight Zone the series, he referred to this episode as saying, this just might be a perfect Twilight Zone episode. He gave it an A+, which I agree. And then the band Rush, a band I'm really not familiar with other than I've heard of them. I never really know any of their songs, but he says they have a song on their 2112 album entitled The Twilight Zone. This episode is mentioned near the end. The lyrics are, beneath his hat, the strangest lies. Take it off, he's got three eyes.
So, oh my God.
So Geddy Lee obviously was a big fan of this episode as well.
Wow, that's so funny. I have that album, but I don't remember that song in particular. That's so funny. I'm going to have to go listen to that now.
Oh, that's great. It's great. And so one other thing I need to mention is about how this episode has affected my life is that a bunch of years ago, I was part of like an arts collective. It was like a website where somebody would pick a theme and everybody would involve would do an illustration based on that theme, whether it was like video games one month or like animals. So one month it was Twilight Zone. Just do a drawing based on something from the Twilight Zone. And I did an illustration of John Hoyt from the back. There's a beautiful shot. He's in this black coat with a black hat. He looks great. There's a shot of him where he's outside the window, and it says Highway Cafe, and we see inside the diner, and we see the bartender. And we just see him from the back. And that's the first indication we know something is wrong, that, you know, why is he back? Why isn't he with everybody else? So we did a drawing of that, just a little black and white drawing of him from the back. And I posted it online, and it stayed up on this website for a while. Then I got an email from the granddaughter-in-law of John Hoyt. Her name is Stacy Royer Hoyt, and she was so charmed that someone was like, remembered her grandfather-in-law's appearance on Twilight Zone, and she and I have been friends ever since. John Hoyt worked with Orson Welles, and like occasionally she will send me like some photos she has of her grandfather-in-law, like with hanging with Orson Welles. All this cool. The guy had an amazing career. So she and I are friends to this day, all because of that episode, and I happened to do that drawing. And
so that's so awesome.
She has a print of it. I printed it out. She got it framed. She has it in her house with her husband, who is the grandson of John Hoyt. So I like this episode is like brought me friendships throughout my life. It's just amazing. So I said this episode will always be my favorite. I just think it's just so well done. And again, now that you've seen The Thing, now that I've seen The Thing so many times, like you realize the whole idea of like the people locked in a snowy room and there's an alien afoot. It's just, man, that like it just always works.
Yeah, there must be something kind of primal about that idea. I don't know. But yeah, it has been done in a bunch of different places now, too. One of the special bonus episodes I've thought about doing and still might at some point is on the X-Files episode that is also like even more clearly like just straight up based on The Thing.
Right.
I think they're even in Antarctica at a science
base. That's right.
I feel like there's been a lot of kind of, you know, homages or just kind of exploring the same kind of ideas, you know, a lot of movies that do. I haven't seen it yet, but I know Annihilation came out just a few days ago, the new movie with Natalie Portman. And I've been hearing a lot of comparisons with that, with The Thing, you know, there's this kind of weird isolated thing happening with, you know, alien creatures or something. I haven't seen it yet, but I keep hearing comparisons, so I'm excited to see it. But yeah, there must be something kind of, something about that story that, you know, really has drawn people to it for, you know, so many years. I mean, you know, since the original short story came out.
Yeah, if you want to draw a through line from the original short story through the 1950s movie, through Carpenter's movie, through the remake, I feel like this episode is like a little branch that tangents off. You know, I mean,
yeah,
there may not be any direct connection. Sterling may not have read it or whatever, because they probably would have been in real trouble if, like, you know, they caught it like, hey, dude, you're stealing my story. But I mean, I feel like this is in the genre of the snowbound, you know, story. This is kind of like a little branch off to that. And so, again, I love the fact that they say the word thing and they talk about the alien under the ice. It's just too perfect. So I'm really thrilled that you liked it, because I was worried. I was like, what happens if Harper doesn't like this? It's like that I really wasted a half hour of his life. But I'm glad you enjoyed it.
No, I enjoyed it quite a bit. Yeah, I'm definitely really eager now to dig into some more episodes. It's one of those things where when I first started watching, you know, the original series of Star Trek, it's a little overwhelming because there's just so much. I mean, this is the 28th episode of the second season. Like,
yeah,
you know, there's a lot out there, but I'm really eager to dig into it now for sure. I loved this episode.
my one advice, a piece of advice, I will say that if you're going to go, like, if you decide to binge watch from beginning to end, you can save season four till when you're really bored, because season four, they bump the show to an hour.
Oh, yeah.
And the most of the stories don't need to be an hour long. So those are kind of a grind. Those are, I would, and then it went back to a half hour for season five. They were like, oh, no, we don't need it. So my advice to a Twilight Zone newbie would be seasons one to three, then five, and then if you're really, you're like, I just want to be a completist, then go to season four. And then maybe, you know what, in season four, go to the 80s Twilight Zone, because that show is fantastic.
Yeah, I hear good things about that, too.
Oh, man, that show is so good. So there's so much good stuff out there. So anyway, Harper, thank you so much for doing this, man. I really appreciate it. I'm blowing smoke. I thought Thing Minute was one of the best podcasts that I've ever listened to. And not even one of the best minute-by-minute shows, but like one of the best podcasts, period. I just enjoyed it so much. And so I'm really proud to have been just even like a tiny part of it. And so just, again, thank you so much for doing it, man. And where can people find you on the internets?
Sure. So as far as the podcast goes, that's at thethingminute.com, or you can find us on Twitter or Facebook at thethingminute. And then as far as my other stuff goes, I do another podcast called GeekRex. So that we're on geekrex.com for that. We do movie talk, and we do awards talk and comics and, you know, all kinds of kind of geek culture stuff. And then just for my personal stuff, I'm at harperwharris.com. That's got all the audio work that I do and podcasts I work on and that kind of thing.
Do you? I'm not familiar with GeekRex. I have to subscribe to that. Is your wonderful wife on that show with you?
No, she's not. Yeah, we've actually been thinking about starting up our own show at some point.
Oh, you guys got a couple of ideas.
For
anyone who hasn't heard the Thing Minute, the episodes with Harper and his wife Michelle are just golden. They're so funny together. You two are like the most adorable couple I've heard on podcasting. It's just fantastic.
Well, thanks. Yeah, we had a lot of fun doing that. Well, I mean, we goof around and talk like that all the time. So when we had the chance to record it for the thing, we were like, oh yeah, maybe we ought to be doing this. A little bit more. We put the mic in front of us sometimes because it was definitely pretty fun.
She's great. I love those episodes with her. Fantastic. They're so cool. So anyway, thanks so much for coming on. Thanks everybody for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. Go if you have. I know we've spoiled it for you, but if you haven't seen this episode, go see it. It's 24 minutes. It goes by. It's really super fast, and it's just great. I just absolutely love it. So. Again, you can find all the back episodes of our show on our website, fireandwaterpodcast.com. And we're always on talking movies and stuff over on the Twitter, which is at Film and Water Pod. So thanks, everybody, for listening. And until next week, that's a wrap.
The point is this, miss. We're all kids in a closet here. Nobody understands what's going on. There was some kind of a saucer that landed in that pond, and he did come in here. I think it'd be a real healthy idea if we pinpointed that particular somebody and kept him from leaving.
Makes sense. Maybe whoever it is invisible. Maybe they're just playing around. Cat and mouse.
That is childish nonsense.
It's as good an explanation as any I've heard. But what if the thing doesn't show itself?